sweat technique.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
In what other ways have the Texans paid the price for ignorance? I think you can look at this year's coaching carousel where all of a sudden Sean Payton, very hot name, they feel like they have to be in bed with Sean Payton to be taken seriously as an organization. Could have done this a year ago. Could have done this a year ago whenever you had Josh McCown on your coaching list, when you had Hines Ward on your coaching list, and then you hired the defensive coordinator for one of the worst defenses in the NFL that you currently had in-house that never interviewed for the position in Lovie Smith. You could have tried to have that conversation a year ago with Doug Peterson, who I think is very comparable to Sean Payton over the course of his career. Won a Super Bowl, has won at a very high level, is an offensive mind. You immediately have to take the organization seriously. When Jacksonville hired Doug Peterson, we all of a sudden said, oh, okay, we're taking Jacksonville seriously, after they had a debacle at Urban Meyer, after they had been a losing franchise for a few years in a row. They bring in Doug Peterson, and it's like, okay, they have to be taken seriously. And you might not have thought that they were going to win the AFC South. I did play that ticket. But you might not have thought that they were going to win the AFC South, but you thought that they were on the come up. Like, he brought them an element of legitimacy that you immediately thought that Jacksonville was going to at some point be on the way up, be a playoff team, and he got it done in year one. I think Sean Payton, you look at the very same way. You look at Sean Payton as he makes you a legitimate franchise. You bring an element of seriousness. You have to respect the Houston Texans. You know who the face of the franchise is. You know who is in control. And you think that a coach like that ultimately is going to bring the organization back to a playoff hunt, playoff conversation. The Texans' price for ignorance of not doing it a year ago is potentially a first-round draft pick. Because if they get Payton, they're going to have to use either number 12 or the Cleveland first-rounder in 2024. And that's a huge price. Like, if we were having the conversation earlier, would you rather have D'Amico Ryans and pick number 12 or Sean Payton, right? You're doing it with all of these coaches on this current list. Would you rather have Doug Peterson and pick number 12 or Sean Payton? It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
That's the price for ignorance.
Let me give you another ignorant. It's Jack Easterby. Jack Easterby is an ignorant that, again, it's kind of like the ghost of Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien left, but the remnants and the stink that he left behind, we're still smelling and dealing with today. It's lesser, but we've dealt with it for a long time after he was out the door and gone. And Easterby's the same way. Now, we saw him and his relevance diminish until the point where there was no return. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that it didn't do what we're talking about in other areas, the same way with perception and missteps.
And it might have only been perception. We really have no idea towards the end.
Towards the end.
But it matters.
But it matters. It all matters. And it all matters in terms of, what did I say that they always worry about more so than anything else? Their image. Yep. And their perception. And the perception becomes reality when everybody starts having the same opinion, which is that they were the laughingstock of all of professional sports, not just of football. They were an embarrassment. They did everything the wrong way, and they couldn't get out of their own way. And that those are big problems. The people that I talked to, the sources that I have, said that he had so much control over everything that he had his little moles in every department. He was getting rid of people that he didn't feel were culturally connected to him all over the entire organization, and he had total autonomy and control to do whatever he wanted. That's a joke. And that is ignorance.
Paying the price for ignorance. Yes. You could even go back to Bill O'Brien, the trades that he made.
Yes,
right?
And he was right there with him.
Two firsts for Laramie Tunsil. You just, for some reason, you throw a third in for Kenny Stills.
D-Hop.
Price you paid for ignorance. The D-Hop trade, like, even if you believe in the theory of, like, let's trade a receiver before you have to pay him big money, much like the Vikings did with Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. Like, the Vikings traded Stephon Diggs right around the time that the Texans traded DeAndre. And the Vikings then parlayed that into Justin Jefferson, whereas the Texans parlayed it into David Johnson and then a second-round pick that you use for Brandon Cooks.
Right.
Like, so there is a price for ignorance. Someone just texted in as well, 713-780-ESPN. Where are the Texans paying the price for ignorance? 713-780-3776. And this is the one I was going to go to, too, that this one hasn't occurred, but it potentially could. 9013, they're paying for ignorance by picking number 2 instead of number 1 for pointless final game hero ball. I don't ultimately think that the Texans are going to trade up to number 1.
I don't think
they're going to fall in love with one singular quarterback where they're like, okay, let's go get Bryce Young and attach additional first to move up one spot. I ultimately don't think that they do that. I ultimately think that they're going to look at these three quarterbacks, and yes, you need to include Will Levis into the conversation of potential quarterbacks at the top of the draft. I think they're probably going to fall in love with like two of the guys and basically take whoever is there at number two. Now, you could say that that's a price for ignorance because now, well, what if you had the other guy at number one? Like, you might say you love all of them. Say you love Bryce Young. Say you love C.J. Stroud. Say you love Will Levis. You're going to like one more than the other. So if you like Bryce Young more than the other two, and now you're picking it two, and Bryce Young goes number one, you're paying the price for ignorance by not winning, or rather not losing the final game.
You have to play incredible poker now just to try and keep everybody from knowing who your true first choice is.
And then get lucky.
As opposed to kicking your feet up and going, we're open for business, but in every round of this draft, we control the chips because we are going to be where everybody wants to be based on who they want and who we already need. And so they went from total control to relying on others and having to play poker, and I hate that. So that was absolutely a very spot-on text.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We've seen this organization pay the price for ignorance a whole lot. And it's ironic, too, that if Sean Payton all of a sudden takes you into a level where you're no longer like this joke of a franchise, you're no longer this dumpster fire, well, you paid that price because you paid the price of potentially the 12th pick in this draft or the future second rounder or the future first rounder that the Cleveland has next year. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 0821 writes this in all capital letters. Maybe it was fear over ignorance, fear of the backlash over the Brian Flores lawsuit and pressure from the outside not to hire Josh McCown. I think that that's fair. I don't know. If we said that that was like a cost for being ignorant because you don't end up with Josh McCown, people would mock that because people mock Josh McCown. So you would have to kind of make the conclusion that you thought Josh McCown was going to succeed as a head coach in the NFL. And quite honestly, I don't think anybody was going to succeed with the Texans this past year. They should have won more than three games because they had a better roster than they did 2 years ago. But you would have to make the conclusion, which is a conclusion that I'm not willing to make, that you can guarantee Josh McCown would have worked as a head coach. But if you do make that conclusion, passing him up to hire somebody else because you were fearful of a lawsuit, you can make the case that that would be paying the cost for ignorance. Like, let's assume that Josh McCown gets a head coaching job in 3 years and all of a sudden he turns into the next Bill Belichick. That would be a cost for ignorance. Now, we don't assume that's going to happen.
Right.
But if it did.
I mean, yeah, that's on a lesser scale than the other ones that we've already brought up because we've already, like, been able to delve deeply into them and realize just how big of a bunch of bumbling buffoons they've been in so many different ways. But when you look at it, look, there's a price for ignorance, and I think there's also a price for arrogance. I think there was a lot that they were taking for granted from a franchise perspective, too. This is why we're seeing the different version of Cal, too, because he thought they were just printing money. That list of season ticket holders was never going to diminish the waiting list. It was always going to be 70,000 people dying to get in the doors. We were, you know, instead now they have to sell group tickets and they're not selling out anything. Merchandise and the bottom line. It was all effective when they were so arrogant they believed, hey, look, we're football in Houston. We are going to be kings forever. And then they realized it can all come crashing down when you're as absolutely incompetent as you've been for a 3 year stretch of time, and everybody exposes it.
That's when the ignorance, you're paying the price for ignorance, turns into the price for arrogance.
Exactly.
You were talking about a little bit earlier. Oh, yeah, we're bulletproof. We can do nothing wrong. Football is king in this city. We could win three games, four games, two games, four games, and we're always going to sell out. And I think that they're, you know, that harsh reality is hitting them in the face right now. Dusty in Mont Bellevue, would giving up number 12 be worth the national credibility that would instantly come with Peyton, especially for a franchise that needs an HR makeover? My stance on this, Blankers, is I know that perception matters, and I know they care about perception and public relations and all of that. I frankly don't care about any of it. The only thing that I want is a winning football organization.
Right.
I want a winning football franchise. I don't care what jerseys they're wearing. I don't care if it has Love You Blue in those jerseys. I don't care if there's a logo change. I don't care who you take at quarterback. I don't care. I mean, I guess I do care who you take, and I do care who you hire as the head coach and, you know, the QB that you take. But ultimately, none of that matters until you get results. That's the only thing that matters to me.
And here's the thing from a different reality, though, Jeremy. Good football will take care of a lot of that, too, because they, in a perfect world, care about perception and performance all at the same time, and they'd like them both to be fixed.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they don't align. But the difference is if you get it to be a lot, you get the changes to be made and you get the difference to be the way you play on the football field, you get a lot more credibility. Look at the Cincinnati Bengals, notoriously one of the cheapest franchises in all of football. Yeah. And their practice facility sucked, and their AstroTurf was awful.
They didn't have an indoor facility.
Right. They didn't want to spend money, and they kept on lowballing contracts, and they did all these things. But you know what they did? They had a Cinderella run to the Super Bowl, and suddenly none of that stuff mattered nearly as much. Suddenly, things were being pointed at in terms of Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and the long-term future of this franchise as them being winners. And then all of a sudden, the practice facility was a done deal. And it wasn't even just a dream and a pipe dream and money that had to be spent that they didn't want to spend. Everything started falling into place. So the Texans also have to realize, as much as they're worried about perception, the biggest thing is fix the football side, and a lot of your perception problems are going to be fixed with it.
Yeah, it's exactly. And to answer the question, too, from Dusty, like, would giving up number 12 be worth the national credibility? Again, we don't care about the national credibility, and we don't want to give up 12 for Sean Payton. But if you do, and then all of a sudden you're a winning organization in 2 years and then for the next 5 years, we'll look back and say it was the right move. So, no, I won't give up 12 for national credibility, but I would give up number 12 for a winning organization,
yeah,
for a winning franchise. And a lot of people that are pro Sean Payton, they're guaranteeing that Payton would bring that success. Well, yeah, you'll give up number 12 because you're going to be a postseason team forever. I think that's a leap. I think it's a reach to automatically think that Sean Payton's going to be a forever playoff head coach, because there was once upon a time we thought Bill Belichick would be a forever playoff coach. And since Brady's left, he's missed it, what, 2 of the 3 years? He's missed the postseason. So there's no lock that because somebody's a top 10 coach that you're going to be a playoff team year in, year out. So I think it's a pretty big reach to assume that Sean Payton's going to come into such a big rebuild, and then all of a sudden in 3 years the Texans are a playoff team for the next decade.
It's possible, but it's not probable.
It's not a guarantee.
Right.
It's not a lock.
Right. Right. And you hope that he steps right in, and the way he's able to kind of add stability and experience and also still be an innovative offensive mind, that, you know, and having cap money to spend as well as the draft now, that if you lost that pick, see, I'm more apt to either give up the first pick of the second round or, like you said, the Browns pick next year, when I think the Browns are going to be a lot better and Deshaun's going to have a full off season to get back to his old form, and they still have a really good roster, that pick's not going to have the value that this year's pick is. I don't like it at 12. I don't mind it so much, first pick, second pick of the second round, or the Cleveland pick next year. Because I do think there is something to be said about not just the credibility from an organizational standpoint they're worried about, but the stability of the entire football side that we've been worried about with Caserio still being there.
Battery Chuck says it would be nice to get credibility first and win after that. I'm not disputing that. That would be nice. But winning a lot of times is what brings the credibility. Like if we look at Nick Sirianni, like what brought Nick Sirianni credibility as an NFL head coach? Winning. Like, it takes a lot of times it's the winning that brings the credibility. Here's one more, how the Texans paying the price for ignorance. 4196, they paid the price on the whole Deshaun Watson situation. One, giving him a no trade, and then two, not getting ahead of his whole allegations before the news came out, cost them multiple better picks. I agree with that. I'm not sure, though. I think the no trade clause probably cost the Texans more than the allegations. I don't think the Texans actually lost trade value with the allegations. I don't think you're getting more than 3 first round draft picks and 2 third round draft picks for Deshaun Watson. Maybe I'm nuts on that. I don't think the trade value really went down for Deshaun Watson. They got 3 first and 2 thirds. Now, they did have to kick the can down the road for a year. I think that was where they lost, is that instead of doing it right away, whenever he demanded the trade, I think the allegations cost the Texans a year before they could trade him. I don't think that the trade value actually diminished at all. I mean, you got 3 first and 2 thirds. It was more than what the Seahawks got for Russell Wilson.
Right. No, look, and again, we always look at the ways that you can retrospectively look at and analyze trades, you know, and you can go by, we look at the D-Hop trade. We just talked about that. So you could say, and conceivably you're right, you could have gotten more, right? But we don't know, because we don't know all the discussions and what Caserio had to do just to get to a point where he felt like he had worked out deals with all the teams, but in particular the teams that it came down to, so that he knew not only was it that he was getting enough for his football side, but he knew that perception mattered there too. And they didn't want to look like they got fleeced, and he didn't want to look like that he got fleeced. So you can go up and down the list. I'll even take it like when the Packers traded Adams. I thought that they got 2 first-round picks, because if they just hung out and waited for him to get another offer, the compensatory, they would have gotten 2 picks in return. They got 1, and they got like a second or a third too. And they thought that was enough. So a lot of times you're looked at after the fact in retrospect, and that's how you're analyzed. But I think when you look at the Watson trade, I think that they did just fine in that deal, better than I thought they might have done with all the extra baggage that kept piling up.
Yeah, I don't think they lost the trade value with the extra baggage, as crazy as that is. They should have, but I don't think they did. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Tom Brady, obviously a big topic of conversation these last couple of days. I don't think he's going to retire, but the reason why I don't, a little different than what I've heard. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Loaded Rain Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A lot of people are saying that Tom Brady needs to retire. He didn't play all that well, really all year long. It came to a head in the wild card game at home against the Cowboys, where the Cowboys blew out the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I was driving around, of course, yesterday in New Orleans, listening to talk radio, everything you've seen on Twitter, listening to national radio, all of these things. And people were saying that Tom Brady should not come back. They're saying that Brady is washed, Brady is done, Brady can't come back, he's too old, mid-40s, he shouldn't play anymore in the NFL. I believe that's the reason that Tom Brady is going to come back. I don't think Tom Brady, one, the whole marriage thing, I think that was a big reason of why he wanted to continue playing on, and a reason that, you know, we could look at that's tangible evidence that was a collateral damage to him wanting to continue his NFL career. But I also believe the narrative on Tom Brady right now: didn't play very well this season, he should retire, he's too old, none of these teams are going to want him. I think all of those comments towards Tom Brady are going to fuel Tom Brady to want to return for at least another season.
I think he and Rodgers both still want to play, and I think that's a lot to do with it. I said that at the time that Rodgers was crapping the bed against the Lions. His entire season, and then it all culminated in a microcosm in the last game. That's not how he wants to go out. That's not how he wants his legacy to end. And I think that Brady's the same way. He dealt with a ton, and we don't know how much of a taxing load it was to deal with the divorce and everything that he was going through in his personal life, but you know it was a major factor. And then the team wasn't what it was in the past, and you had three-fifths of your offensive line change and older players that got seemingly older by the snap, like a Leonard Fournette, like trying to find something out of Julio Jones, like the defensive guys that started to regress as well that you didn't expect to see that from, Levante David, and even White didn't have the kind of year that he had a year ago. So I think that you're right. I think Brady's going to come back, but he, like Rodgers, believes that if you put the right team around me, I can still do a lot of really good things. And we saw that. We saw glimpses of Brady when he had decent protection and he had a good complement of receivers, that he was throwing the ball over the all over the field. He was zinging it. He was making smart decisions. And there were games when you said, oh, he can still do it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the last game said maybe he can't. And Rodgers the same way. When he was healthy before he hurt the thumb, and once he got, after skipping all of offseason and preseason and looking like a complete idiot in week one, he started making better throws. Then it was the receivers dropping him. But then until he hurt his thumb against the Giants, he had every reason to believe he could still do this. And then it was also getting those young receivers to be on the same page and understand what it takes to be not only in the NFL, but playing for a guy like him. And now, you know, you get him a wide receiver one in the offseason, you make a trade, you go get, or in free agency, you go get a top receiver, and you're not that far away from giving him what he needs as long as he's healthy. So I think both guys are going to play again, but both guys ideally would love to have, you know, the tailor-made situation where you just step in and win. It's not that easy all the time.
I think, too, that I think that Rodgers is more suited to play next year. I think Rodgers still has more game left than Tom Brady. I think that Brady's going to come back because of all the negative remarks towards Tom Brady. That doesn't mean I think Tom Brady's going to be like have this great story, great comeback, player of the year, and be all that good next year. In fact, I don't think that. Whereas Rodgers, I think, will be very good again next season. And I also, like, some of the remarks from Aaron Rodgers lead me to believe he's going to come back. Mm-hmm. Like, he's meeting with them and talking about their offseason plans. Like, you're not going to have those conversations if you're thinking about retiring.
He's just such a drama queen that he just wants everybody to think, because I've told you this, the way he restructured, when he restructured, and oh, by the way, he restructured for 3 years, $150 million, and then right after that, in less than a year ago, he said, when asked the question, will you finish your career as a Green Bay Packer, he said, absolutely yes. Now he likes to leave the door open. Not because there's any place he could go where teams and the dead cap money make sense to where anybody would even fathom trading for him anyway. It's because he likes everybody asking him all the time, and he likes being at the forefront of every discussion. He's got two choices. He plays or he quits.
Mm-hmm.
And if he plays, his hope is that the organization still wants to do what they did for him a year ago when he wanted Randall Cobb and Bakhtiari back, though he was hurt, and Tanyan and all the guys that were his boys. Now, there's a little more apprehension behind the Packers management to say, we want to keep doing this. It's one thing to have you back, but then if you start telling us where we got to spend cap money we didn't want to spend, now that's a problem. Because if you want to make a trade or you want to get guys, but you also want to build your youth, you don't want to have to get Aaron's approval every year.
No, I think they're going to step up their spending, not so much their spending, but their aggressiveness to build that team.
They're going to keep a big window open for a short period of time and say for the next year or two, we're in complete go for it mode. And they're going to try not to mortgage the future in the process because they've already taken a lot of young players. But I believe that that's exactly what they're going to do.
I kind of like their receiving core going into next year, though.
If you give me a wide receiver one.
Yeah. Even if you don't, I still don't hate it. Like, it's much better if you have a receiver one. Like, if you get a DeAndre Hopkins.
I was going to say.
Or even like a Brandon Cooks, I think that's a pretty good crew.
If Cooks is your upgrade from a Randall Cobb, too, because he's still got more in the tank.
And Watson's more of an outside receiver.
Yeah, because Watson's your burner. Dobbs is your guy that can play all over, but is more of a middle-of-the-field type guy. You give him a wide receiver one, and I said that they should go after DeAndre Hopkins, and if they got to give up their first-round pick to get him and more, they should do that because, again, you're playing for the short term right now. You already got two receivers.
Yeah.
So you need a guy that leads the room and leads the team in receiving while these young players still get better. But you give him that and a tight end and look the hell out. They got a good offense.
I think tight end's kind of where they could really improve a
big
lot.
Time.
Yeah, quite a bit. Zach on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Where do you think Tom Brady's going to be next season? I think Tom Brady has played himself out of some of these conversations.
Well, that's because Brock Purdy played himself into the Niners.
I think it's a combination of both.
Yep.
I think it's a combination of both. Like, if I'm San Fran, I'd rather go into next year with Trey Lance and Brock Purdy fighting for that quarterback number one job than bringing in 46-year-old Tom Brady. So I think that he's played himself out of the San Francisco conversation. I saw a lot of people predicting where he's going to play. A lot of people predicted Miami. I think he played his way out of Miami, quite honestly, too. And I know that Tua has all of the injury concerns, and it's very, very scary that he's not going to be able to complete an entire season, availability. That's very, very important. I think Brady's played himself out of the Miami conversation. I don't think it's going to be Miami. I don't think it's going to be San Francisco. I do think he's going to come back, and I really don't think that there's a whole lot of options. I think Las Vegas will be very desperate to have a quarterback, especially a quarterback that can sell tickets, right? And we've heard that Mark Davis is not too pleased that you have a lot of out-of-town fans coming in, the opponent's fans coming into that venue. Plus, they're desperate with Devontae Adams and the McDaniels. Their head coach has the long history with Tom Brady. I see that being a very realistic option, and I see the Tennessee Titans, who, Ryan Tannehill, nothing to write home about. They don't like Malik Willis. They were playing Dobbs ahead of Malik Willis when it mattered the absolute most. I believe those are really the only, some people have mentioned the Jets. I don't think the Jets are in play here. I think there's two options for Tom Brady next year. I think it's Tennessee, I think it's Las Vegas, and I think it will be Las Vegas.
I think that of all the things Brady has done in his career, the table is set to be a hero one more time if he goes to Vegas. Because he's got a running back, assuming they clear up their own stupidity and re-sign Josh Jacobs. If you've got Jacobs and Waller, you've got Devontae Adams, you've got Renfro in the slot, you've got everything Brady needs to be more than successful, and he doesn't have to try to do too much. We know he's not going to scramble, but we know what in terms of progressions and decision-making and the internal clock, he's got all the intangibles. If you give him the right roster, if the offensive line is solid and he's got all those weapons to deal with, look, and their defense is already good. He can do it, and McDaniels needs it. Because the jury is so far deliberating and ready to make a decision on McDaniels already. He needs a savior.
Yep.
Tom could be the savior one more time. The same way he won one for Tampa Bay, he could come in one more time, and I'm going to say he's going to win it. But he could turn that entire franchise around for one season. He could save McDaniels' butt. He could show that he could still play because he didn't have to do too much. He could pile up some numbers because of the weapons he has. And a lot of times, a screen out of the backfield or a short pass with the guys that he has could turn into massive amounts of yards and lots of quarterback ratings. He could do that, and it would be the perfect scenario. And in Vegas, he gets away from his past. He gets away from New England. He gets away from Tampa. He gets away from all the Giselle. and he could just be him for one more year and love football, it makes too much sense.
They have the seventh pick too. Like they're gonna add a really good player in the draft.
There you go.
They're gonna add a really good player in the draft. Where do you think Brady plays next year? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Coming up next, the wizard of the NFL, Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Let's ask him where he thinks Brady plays next year. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about Apollo for quite a while. Look, Dr. O knows what he's doing because he knows what you need to win the day. You're not trying to win a gold medal in life. You're trying to win the day. You're trying to get everything done that you need to get done. Be there for your wife and your family. Do the things that you need to do for work. Get to the gym and make sure you get a good workout. Recover quicker after the workout. Look, those are all things that Apollo Men's Health can help with. And they can do it for men and for women. And it starts with hormone therapy and all the different ways that you can administer it or they can administer it. And you can get it done on a daily basis. Having more energy, and that allows you to get more things accomplished. The other things that they do for you that make so much sense, you can do a full body composition analysis. I do one every month or so because it allows me to check my numbers and realize body fat down, muscle mass up, all the important numbers like hereditary, the things that run in my family, like your blood pressure and all the other things that you need to monitor. It's there for you and you can check it and you can continue to stay on top of it so that you can live your best life. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. Stuff for your smoothies, they got that too. Start the process right now by going to apollomh.com. Check out all the services they offer. If some of them make sense to you, sign up for your first appointment. Most major insurance accepted, discounts for military personnel. Mention my name, Joel Blank. You get a free B12 shot that I was talking about, or because I take a B12 shot every week as well, or get a free body composition analysis that I mentioned, and you can chart your progress as you make progress and get along on your start the journey right now because they're good people doing great things, and they're going to help you. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line, being joined by the wizard of the NFL, Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Howard, we were just having the conversation about Tom Brady. I think Brady's going to come back because everybody's saying that he shouldn't come back. I think it's going to fire Tom Brady up. Where do you think he plays? What are some likely destinations for Thomas Brady in his mid-40s?
Yeah, that's a good question in terms of likely, because we can certainly list a lot of them, but I kind of chuckle when I hear, I think it was being said on the broadcast Monday, well, you know, if he goes out, well, he will be a free agent, but if he doesn't re-sign with the Bucks, let's say, and he says, if he goes out there in the market, boy, there's going to be a lot of teams. And I'm thinking to myself, there weren't a lot of teams a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. There weren't teams lining up at his door for his services. I mean, the two teams that were basically interested were the Bucks and the Chargers. And so, and who knows? The Bucs might not have been interested had Jameis Winston not thrown whatever it was, 30 interceptions, you know, the season before. And so, you know, some people have thrown out San Francisco, but why would the 49ers do that? They don't need Tom Brady to be a really good team. So I don't know about that. There's this thing being thrown out there that, you know, maybe Sean Payton will bring Tom Brady with him to Carolina. I certainly wouldn't rule that out. By any stretch, but you know, if Sean Payton does that, then he also knows that in a year or two he's going to have to be looking for a new quarterback. That's not to say they couldn't find one, but I just wonder if he wants to go somewhere with a younger quarterback in place to build around. But a lot of those places aren't there for him either. And so, man, I mean, I don't know if there is the obvious likely place for him to land. That doesn't mean that aren't teams looking for quarterbacks, but are they looking for a quarterback that's going to be 46 next year? And while he can still throw the football, is he the same guy? No, he certainly isn't. Can you win with him? Yes, with the right team around him, with around you. And I think that's going to be what drives his decision on what to do, because I don't think he wants to slog through another very disappointing
but Howard,
season.
He had look at Vegas. He's got everything you're talking about. He is assuming they work out something with Jacobs, and you got Waller and you got Adams. You got a coach that's desperately trying to save his butt, and he knows him better than anybody, and they've worked together in the past, and they're looking for a bridge to get him to whoever's going to be their long-term solution, but to get McDaniel's butt out of the fire and kind of save this generation of the Raiders in their new city. It makes too much sense to me, even if he is a bridge, and for him, because he's got all the weaponry in the world to make it work.
That's a great call. No question about it. It's a great call. And obviously, wherever he goes, he's going to be a bridge. And so, but that one, especially when you had an owner in Mark Davis, who weirdly at the end of the season was complaining about, you know, being all these fans from other cities at his games. Well, what did he think was going to be the case in Vegas? I mean, you had to believe that going in. Well, this could be a way to keep a lot of those people there that are the Raiders fans, you know, in that market. And you're right, with Davante Adams, they probably have to get Josh Jacobs signed. But, you know, that's a team that's pretty good. And then, of course, the obvious connection is that Josh McDaniels is the head coach, and he was the coordinator there, obviously, in New England for a lot of those years that Brady was there. So that one almost, now that you mentioned that, and I should have come up with it, that's the one that probably makes the most sense of anything, and yet I haven't heard that many rumblings about it, which is kind of odd. But, hey, anything can happen in this league. We know that during the year, in the offseason, whatever it might be, but that one definitely checks a lot of the right boxes.
Howard, Sean Payton's the biggest name in this coaching carousel, but it comes at a cost. He himself, Sean Payton, is saying the requirement to trade for the services of Sean Payton is a mid to late first. All the reports say first-round draft pick. How much is a coach worth? Sean Payton versus the rest of the coaching carousel, is he worth a first-rounder?
I believe he definitely is, and it's for this reason. Because now there's no guarantees in life at all, and there's never a guarantee even with a coach, but there's a heck of a lot better chance to win with a guy who's done it for 15 years and has been successful, and then getting a newbie who's never been a head coach before. And so if you give up a first round, I mean, we know first round picks are a crapshoot. I don't, you know, you hear everyone say, oh, you know, you can't give up an elite player, you can't give up this. That's one guy. That's one guy of the 48 that you're going to run out there on Sundays. And granted, one player can obviously tremendously help a franchise, no doubt about it. But so can Sean Payton and being that coach. And I went back, guys, and looked. I went back a few more years than just the most recent because the jury's still out a little bit on the last three or four seasons. From 2016 to 2018, and I just looked at the first five picks in the draft, much less all the ones after that. And one of the reasons I look at the top five, because here in Arizona where I am, people are saying, well, we shouldn't give up a number three pick for Sean Payton, and but that could be an elite guy and all that. Well, out of the first five picks in each of those three drafts, that's 15 players, only five of them are currently with the team that drafted them.
Wow.
So five of 15 are with the current team. And so that doesn't mean you might hit the guy that will be with your team. But if you do your job right in personnel acquisition, one player shouldn't be the one that either makes you really good or doesn't. And like I said, I'm not saying that one guy can't help a team tremendously. Obviously, we can list a lot of examples that, you know, where it happens. But like I said, the head coach that's coming in who runs things the way he wants, knows what he's doing, and communicates with the personnel side, and has been very successful. It doesn't mean you still don't win every year. I mean, heck, they had years, 3 years in a row with Drew Brees, where they went 7-9 and weren't in the postseason. That happens. It happens to teams. It's hard in this league. It's not that much difference between winning 7 and winning 10. But he also went to the playoffs a whole bunch of times. And that, to me, is definitely worth a first-round draft pick.
What does it say, Howard, about Ben Johnson if we were hoping that he was the number one candidate the Texans looked at? That a lot of people looked at what he did and how innovative he was and what he had to work with in Detroit and said he should be a head coach, he should be a guy, he could be a guy that could lead a young quarterback in the franchise, and now he says he's staying with the Lions. Is it more that he saw something he didn't like, or is it more that maybe he wasn't as ready as he thought he was, Or was it that he was realistic in his comments that he thought the best place for him and that he liked what he was doing was in Detroit?
I think that's a big part of it. And I think it's very hard for a guy in that position to make a conscious decision to take yourself out of the running. Now, maybe he didn't think he was really going to get the job. But, you know, you never know along those lines. But you also, when you're in that position, you know that you probably have one shot at this, being a head coach. Because if you fail, then, and it's a lot of times it's not on the coach for failure, but that's the way it's perceived. If the team doesn't win, and also knowing that they're going to move on probably maybe after 1 or 2 years and not really give you a chance to develop all those players that you need to be successful, you want to pick the right spot, whether it's the team with where you're comfortable with the personnel department, the owner, the quarterback, whatever it might be. You want it to be right. And I believe in a lot of these situations with Eric Bieniemy, and he's obviously the poster person for not getting a job and all the interviews he's had. I think there's some of them that he probably didn't even really want because he's got a great situation with the Chiefs. And, Grandy, you want to be a head coach? There's no doubt about it. But you can be there with the Chiefs and making good money and with Patrick Mahomes, and that's a great situation to be in. So, again, you want to pick the right spot. I go back many, many years, guys, and I remember there's been other examples of this, but the one that jumps out at me is Mike Holmgren. When he was with the 49ers, and he was in a similar situation as Bieniemy because he wasn't the coordinator because Bill Walsh was the head coach. He was the quarterback's coach. And he was getting a bunch of interviews, and the Jets were ready to hire him, and he just didn't feel it was the right fit, and he turned it down, and he stayed with the 49ers, and then ended up with Green Bay with Brett Favre and Ron Wolf as the GM. That's going to the right situation where you have a chance. Even in the right situation with all those things going on, it's still hard to win, but it's even much obviously more difficult when you don't have the quarterback or you don't have the really quality personnel staff or an owner who's truly committed. Then it gets even harder. And so but it's tough because everyone says, well, there's only 32 of them. If you got an offer, you got to do it. Well, that offer might look pretty good, but after 2 years, you might be regretting that you made that decision.
Yeah, that's my fear from a Houston Texans perspective is that you have Benny Johnson that's looking at that Texans job and saying, I'm good. I'll wait a year. I'd rather be the Detroit OC. I'd rather wait for a new job to pop up in a year from now. I don't think it's a great look for the Texans organization. Howard, we always appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Look forward to doing it again.
Yep, we definitely doing it. And like I said, certainly a guy looks at it and says they've just fired a coach after 1 year.
True.
Twice in a row. And so that raises red flags with guys. And that's what the Texans have got themselves into with what they've done.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Howard Balzer. Yeah, Howard Balzer, the wizard of the NFL. What are the looming questions for the Houston Astros? And I'm starting to think that Sean Payton has the Houston Texans third on his list. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friend, Doc Linville, again. Look, Dr. Linville can make a difference in your life on a daily basis. He can get your hairline back again. He can give you a full head of hair where you had a baboon's butt popping out on the back of your head, and you didn't know what to do with it other than maybe shave it all. You don't have to, because the NeoGraft procedure is here. It's real, it works, and it really is natural because it's your own hair. Genetically, you're always going to have hair around the sides and the back. It's where you lose it the most is when your forehead becomes an 8-head or you get that baboon's butt rearing its nasty head on the back of your dome. You can take care of these things with NeoGraft because what they do is they take the follicles from where you have them and will never lose them, and they transplant them to where you need them most. In no time at all, you'll start seeing the results of having hair again, and you're going to feel better about yourself with your self-esteem and your appearance, and it's going to continue to get better as the hairs grow and get stronger and are with you for the long haul. 95%+ of the follicles moved stay and grow and are with you for the long haul. That's the number that convinced me. It can convince you too. But what I'm here to convince you of is exploring it because of the fact that as an ESPN listener, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs you $150, but for you as listeners, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com and make an appointment free of charge. Nothing to lose but the fact that you could lose your balding spots by going in there, ask all the questions from financing to how long the procedure lasts to how it works to when you start seeing the full results. And the one thing that I told you that I learned, 95%+ of the follicles moved are going to stay, grow, and be with you, which makes it all worthwhile. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. I believe in these people, and you should too. It's 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, yeah, I think Sean Payton is the, he has the Texans third on his list. That's my prediction. Mark Maskey, who covers football for the Washington Post. So take it for a grain of salt. Panthers owner David Tepper would give Sean Payton, quote, just about anything he wants to be the team's coach, one source says. It's not clear, however, how enthusiastic Payton is at this point about the opportunity in Carolina. Okay, so maybe Houston above Carolina. I think that's probably a toss-up. The other one, the Broncos remain in very strong position to be able to get Sean Payton, whatever the interest level by other teams. They have the NFL's wealthiest owners, Walmart money. Payton has told associates that he likes the Broncos' stable ownership and is willing to work with Russell Wilson. I think the Texans, I think they could be third. They're definitely not one.
That's why he's third on my list, too. I don't like him disrespecting us like that. Screw him.
That's what he said. It's all a report.
Okay, well,
you know what? It's all a report from
Mark Maskey.
Maybe
the truth lies somewhere in the middle, so maybe it's more Carolina than Denver. I don't know.
In the middle? Where's the other end of the spectrum?
Texans are third. Broncos are one. Carolina would be in the middle.
All right. Here are the looming questions left for the Houston Astros. We're less than a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. They will report on February 17th, which, by the way, this is a World Baseball Classic year, which I kind of love and hate. Why do you hate baseball? Why do you hate the world playing
baseball? I love baseball.
Coming together and playing baseball.
I hate the World Baseball Classic because it's too close to the Major League season. And for sometimes when a lot of your players, and in the case of the Astros, who have a lot of really good players, they're going to be playing for their country. And they're going to be getting ready earlier. And that means the chance to get hurt becomes more significant. I lived through too much of the Yao Ming playing year-round or close to it and then having them get injured all the time to not have some kind of fear factor with the World Baseball Classic.
From an Astros perspective, don't love the World Baseball Classic. From like just a baseball viewer, I love the World Baseball Classic.
Significant baseball to watch.
It's fun. Like it is really fun. You see these countries that are loaded. Like I've been looking at some of these rosters, or some people have been tweeting them, and I just happened to see them. Some of these rosters are going to be fun. Like they're going to be a lot of fun to see Venezuela against the USA or whatever, Puerto Rico, whatever. I think it's going to be.
Mike Piazza is going to have the team he wants with Trey Mancini and company. But other than that, you're right. There are some countries that are loaded.
I have a good friend who pitched for Italy in the WBC. He went four perfect innings in his final outing with Italy. Now they had the pitch count thing, so they had to take him out of the game. Otherwise, and it was against where's Miguel Cabrera from? I think he's from Venezuela, right? In Cabrera, Venezuela.
Cabrera and Altuve.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
He's Venezuelan. So, yeah, my good friend starting the game for Italy with perfect innings against Venezuela. Miguel
Can't
Cabrera,
take that away from his resume forever.
Miguel Cabrera hit one off of him that was like 150-mile-per-hour exit velocity right to the second baseman. It was the hardest baseball I've ever seen hit. It was an out. It's a line out. It's an out in the box score. But it was the hardest hit baseball I've ever seen in my life.
I lived that in college.
He was getting just absolutely hammered on?
No, I didn't. No, I did all right. But we were playing at the time the number one team in the country. Phillips University in Oklahoma, and they had the Blue Jays ended up drafting him very high. He was a third round pick. He was a third baseman. In left field, there was the fence, a hill, and a swimming pool.
Towels Hill?
And he hit one on top of the swimming pool against me, but it was foul. Mm-hmm. And I took a big deep breath and knew that I wouldn't get riddled for that or ribbed for that. And I insisted on throwing a fastball in the very next pitch. And he did what Cabrera did, only he hit it between short and third, and it was a base hit, and at least it wasn't a home run. But, I mean, I looked and gasped and thought, if that was fair, I would never live that down. So, yeah, I've given up one that had should have had a stewardess on it. It got out so fast, and it went so far.
Who was this guy? What was his name?
His name was – I used to know it, too. It was like Gary something or other. But he was a Blue Jays prospect for years. But he was a big bat in college.
Yeah. This Gary something or another and Miguel Cabrera. Yeah, they belong in the same sentence.
See, and then you got crap on it. I mean, I know
exact same story. Huh? Exact same story.
Same feeling.
Here's the pair of looming questions left over the Astros. This from Will Licht of MLB.com. He has 10 key questions that will decide the AL West. But let's focus on the Astros side of this discussion. The one looming question over the Astros, when you look at this team, can any of the young starters step up and be the next Justin Verlander?
I think it's very unrealistic to say that anybody can step up this next season and be the next Justin Verlander. Can they be in the running for the Cy Young? Can they have a great season? Yeah, I think there's two guys at the front of the list that both qualify for that, and maybe three. Lance McCullers has to stay healthy. We know he's got unbelievable stuff, but we know that it's been like from year to year, besides the injuries. One year he's great at home, the next year he's great on the road. He's got to put it all together. He's kind of an afterthought. But I think we know that with Christian Javier and the year that Fromber already had a year ago, the stuff of Javier, the year that you're building on with Fromber, you have two guys that give you hope that they can be in the conversation for Cy Young. And because of how many good pitchers you have, neither one of them have to be Justin Verlander. But if they're on that path, they're fine.
To me, it's not a fair question. No. None of these young pitchers are going to be the next Justin Verlander. No one's going to, you know, win three Cy Youngs. No one's going to have, even if you just want to look at last year, no one's going to have a 1.75 ERA. So no. None of these young starters are going to step up and be the next Justin Verlander. But to your point, I think that Fromber Valdez is a potential Cy Young Award winner. Lance McCullers, now the stars have to align there, and you need a full year of health, which has been difficult for Lance McCullers. He's got Cy Young stuff. Christian Javier, in my opinion, should have had Cy Young votes this year, was the most underrated pitcher in baseball. And if you look at some of the, you know, the average stats, opponent batting average, best in the league, strikeouts per nine, amongst the best in the league, if he had the ERA to qualify, would have been in the top five. And then, had one of the most underrated pitching performances in World Series history that for some reason people just gloss over. So I think those three guys have the stuff to be like a Cy Young contender. Hunter Brown's development's going to be interesting. There's no way Hunter Brown's going to be in contention for a Cy Young next year, but maybe a rookie of the year. Maybe in 5 years he can be in that conversation, probably putting the cart ahead of the horse there. Let's see how he develops. Be patient with the young kid. So no, I don't think that the Astros can have one guy be a Justin Verlander and have a 1.75 ERA, but I think they have a collection of guys that are Cy Young capable and still have a very deep rotation, and I would consider the best rotation in the American League and certainly the American League West, even if you don't have that horse like Justin Verlander at the top. And also, like, do we expect Justin Verlander to do that again this year?
I don't.
I don't either. I think it's impossible. I honestly think it's almost impossible.
But I'd say you're right. It is. And I think that I would take it a step further and say I don't think that Verlander's going to come close to the same. I don't know that Verlander's going to be in the running for the Cy Young in the National League this year. I don't think he is. I think that what we saw happen to him in the playoffs, after a lot of people forget, they nursed him along just to get to the playoffs and not be burnt out, gives me a lot of cause for concern. And I don't think that I think we saw the best of Justin Verlander that he had left when he was with the Astros. I don't think they're going to see that in New York.
Yeah. King of Twitch, team ERA is going up. How much? Who knows? I would agree with that. The team ERA is going to be very, very difficult.
Schedule changes, too.
Which.
You don't feast off of last year's American League West team.
But I also don't think the American League West this year is the American League West of last year.
But
I think it's much better.
This year. But last year, you could feast off of all the crap.
Absolutely, yeah. The second looming question hanging over the Astros, did they need to upgrade at the catcher position?
No. I think that we knew that with 1 year left on his contract, with all the trust the pitchers have in Maldi, with the fact that without a Verlander that's a seasoned veteran that does his own thing anyway at the front of your rotation, you need a psychologist behind the plate and a coach behind the plate like Maldi for one more year. And if you find out through injury or otherwise that you need a veteran, you can still trade for one. And you can find someone that's serviceable enough to get you through what you need to do before you have to call up one of the young guys that I don't think is ready to be that coach and psychologist yet. But I don't think it's a deal breaker or any kind of major concern that you're starting the season with Maldi back behind the dish with young kids behind him.
Yep. I don't think that they needed to upgrade either. This Astro lineup's pretty deep. We can get into the semantics of, like, what's the one thing we would have liked to see. And maybe it's still coming. You still have nearly a month before pitchers and catchers.
If you were in a position of luxury where you had so much money saved up and you could go out and get a Wilson Contreras or some guy that you weren't expecting to be able to focus on because of all the other needs you might have, sure. But other than that, you're fine.
I like the what Marty Maldonado brings behind the plate. I think receiving a game is one of the most underrated things a catcher can do. Me and Dusty Baker are pretty much the same guy. That catcher ERA stat, sure, he's a benefactor of really good pitching, but I do put value in Marty Maldonado calling a good game behind the plate, seeing his pitchers through. I'm also intrigued by the young guys. Like, I think Corey Lee's got a chance to be a pretty darn good catcher. I think Jiner Diaz, if he can, you know, show that he's capable of playing the position defensively, has an opportunity to be a pretty darn good catcher. So I'm intrigued by that backup catcher spot, and I wouldn't be disappointed at all if whoever wins that backup catcher job starts 50 games, where Martin Maldonado starts 112 and the other guy starts 50. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by the young catchers. So, like, if
he obviously has to stay healthy, and he had a lot of health issues even late in the season finishing.
Maldi? Yeah, but I'm not worried, like, to the point. If he got hurt, I still think that the Astros survive, and I think it's rather easy to trade for a catcher at the deadline.
It is. Look, there's going to be veteran catchers. Did Darno get traded?
I don't know.
Because Darno,
I don't believe he did.
Because he's the odd man out in Atlanta now after he was the man. There's going to be guys
like
that.
I think they want to keep him, actually.
But I'm just saying, there's going to be guys like that that have experience, that are veterans, that are serviceable, that can get you what you need if you need to make a trade in season. If something happens or you realize you needed more than you thought you needed at that said position.
Yeah. I mean, if the Twins are 20 games below 500 at the deadline, it wouldn't shock me if Christian Vasquez is somebody who gets traded again. Like a mid-market team that has $20 million owed to Vasquez over the next 2 years after this one. That's the type of moves we see all the time. 713-780-ESPN. Can the Astros replace Justin Verlander? Did they need the catching help? The two looming questions over the Houston Astros. All right, coming up next, the stories that we haven't had a chance to get to. We've been dying to get to these things, but Brendan hasn't allowed us to. It's in case we missed it with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you! You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down!
ESPN 97.5.